ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So what's Australia given the world? How about Tim Tams, polymer banknotes, and a very specific electoral system?
We've got compulsory voting, preferential voting,
the secret ballot, the democracy sausage.
I'm Annabelle Crabb. Join me for the rollicking backstory of our democratic dreamers and how our electoral system works today. It's called Annabelle Crabb's Civic Duty, and you can stream all the episodes now on ABC iView.
More than a million workers were either sent home or worked without pay. The poorest Americans were left hungry, and travel plans were thrown into chaos as thousands of flights were cancelled. But now, the longest government shutdown in American history is coming to an end. Today, political scientist Charles Hunt from Boise State University on why a small group of Democrats ended up giving Donald Trump what he wanted. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
It's day one of the government shutdown, and already the likes of the Washington Monument and other attractions are now closed for tours. It means government reports have been halted and scientific research delayed.
For 36 days now, some 670,000 federal workers have been furloughed. Another 730,000 are working without pay. 42 million Americans are waiting on food stamps, and 3.2 million airline passengers have been met with delays.
The reckless Democrat shutdown. Every Democrat in Congress has voted to hold the American people hostage.
Charles, the idea of a government shutting down, it's a pretty foreign concept for Australians, let's put it that way. But it does seem to happen all the time in the United States. Just give me a bit of an idea of why that is, first of all.
Sure. There are a couple different reasons. So when the government shuts down in the U.S., it means that Congress and the president have not reached an agreement on passing a federal budget. If they can't get to an agreement on a full yearly budget, they'll just keep funding the government at its current levels, at whatever levels were agreed to last time, in the short term, maybe for just a couple of months or even just a couple of weeks. And what happened, you know, 40-some days ago is that Congress couldn't come to an agreement even on a short-term continuing resolution.
Okay, so the latest shutdown, it began on October the 1st.
Yes.
But that was in relation to healthcare subsidies, wasn't it?
Healthcare subsidies are one of the main issues that Democrats cited as a reason they couldn't go along with the Republican budget, with the budget that Donald Trump wanted to pass. So these are subsidies resulting from the Affordable Care Act, which is also known as Obamacare. And these subsidies basically helped keep healthcare affordable, health insurance affordable for, you know, roughly 20 million Americans. And this was a subsidy that was scheduled to lapse, to go on hiatus at the end of this year. And the Republicans in Congress had not scheduled a vote. And so Democrats essentially decided, you know, this is the fight we are going to pick here, that this is a popular issue for us, and we're going to keep the government shut down until these demands are met.
Okay. Well, as you say, the shutdown began, what, more than 40 days ago now. And I mean, it's had this huge impact on American workers, right? Because thousands of federal workers, they've been stood down. Is that usually what happens, or is this just a kind of Trump thing?
Well, the part of this, it's important to separate, and I'm glad you put it that way, what parts of this shutdown were typical of a government shutdown. And a lot of these things are typical, right? The government essentially runs out of money. And so a lot of federal workers are furloughed, right? They're not fired, but they are essentially placed on leave and they're not paid. other federal workers, like the Transportation Security Agency, like the military, others of what we would sort of call essential personnel, we continue basically to make them go to work, but we don't pay them. But what tends to happen the longer a shutdown goes on is, you know, there's only so long a TSA agent can work without pay. And so you get folks starting to call in sick. And that's what's been driving a lot of these airport delays in the U.S. that I think was putting a lot of pressure on folks.
Yeah.
What's less normal and what hasn't happened in previous shutdowns is the really aggressive nature with which the Trump administration has tried to sort of take advantage of the shutdown as a way of really reducing the federal workforce and diminishing the size of the federal government.
Because of the shutdown, which I think they made a big mistake, we're able to take out billions and billions of dollars of waste, fraud, and abuse. And they've handed it, you know, to on a silver platter.
This is the White House leveraging this shutdown. And typically, you know, a White House would not want to vastly diminish the federal workforce, but this has been a priority of the Trump administration. And so they've really pushed the boundaries of what previous presidents have done in this area.
Yeah, pressure seemed to really grow on Donald Trump, I think, when these flights did start to get cancelled, right? Because there's this concern that people won't be able to get around during this big Thanksgiving holiday season. But also, my gosh, you know, the SNAP benefits, nutrition assistance was cut.
Yes.
I mean, there was so much damage being done to ordinary Americans, right? They were hurting.
Yeah, well, and this is another area where it's important to separate what's typical of a shutdown and what's not. So typically with what we would call entitlement benefits, like, you know, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP, things like Medicare and Medicaid, healthcare for the elderly or the poor, Social Security, their funding tends to come from other sources than the yearly federal budget. There's a lot of reserve cash. And, you know, the longer a shutdown goes on, the more pressure it does put on those systems. But in this case, a federal judge basically had to order the president to free up that funding to fund these SNAP benefits. And the administration was basically fighting it tooth and nail, saying, oh, we're only going to fund part of it. Oh, it's up to the states to fund it. It's still not entirely clear to me why they were going that route. It seemed like it was not very popular and did create a lot of hardship for Americans.
Food banks like this one in Maryland have become a necessity for many as America's longest ever shutdown drags on.
I'm a single mom of a teenager. Apartments are not cheap. And yeah, it's been very difficult.
I was here last week. I'd never been to one. I never thought I would have to, but you know, I'm here.
That is something that was new this time and I think was adding to a lot of the pain that regular Americans were feeling and increased the pressure on, I think, Democrats who saw a lot of their constituents sort of getting hurt in this way.
Yeah, but Donald Trump, he was really feeling the pressure too, right? The longer that this went on, Americans were increasingly blaming the Republicans and blaming him.
Yes.
He even sort of pointed to the shutdown for the Republicans' poor performance in the elections held across America last week in New York, New Jersey, in Virginia.
If you read the pollsters, the shutdown was a big factor, negative for the Republicans. And that was a big factor. And they say that I wasn't on the ballot was the biggest factor. But I don't know about that, but I was honored that they said that.
He was feeling this.
He definitely was. And, you know, I'm not sure whether the shutdown really had a really big impact on the outcomes of the elections last week. It's certainly plausible in Virginia where, you know, that's close proximity to Washington, D.C. A lot of federal workers live in Virginia. And the more the blame was getting sort of put on the Republicans and on Donald Trump, the more maybe electoral pain they were feeling. Mm. And so he was definitely feeling the pressure there.
Well, over the weekend, there was this breakthrough, of course. So let's now, Charles, consider what happened. Just tell me what deal was actually done and how did it come about?
So there are a bunch of different components of this deal, but the main one is that in exchange for a sufficient number of votes in the Senate to open the government, the Senate Majority Leader, the Republican John Thune, he essentially guaranteed that there would be an up or down vote at some point in the next few weeks on these Obamacare subsidies that have been central to the shutdown fight. What it was not was a guarantee that the bill would pass. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether enough Republicans will actually go along with it and whether Donald Trump will sign such a bill.
Sounds like the Democrats didn't actually get what they wanted. As I understand it, there was 8 moderate Democrats who actually broke ranks. So why on earth did they do that? Because that actually really annoyed, let's put it mildly, some of their colleagues, including Bernie Sanders.
And my friends, know what you are voting on. Studies are out there that when you throw 15 million people off health care, some 50,000 of our fellow Americans will die unnecessarily every single year.
I would have to say that the vast majority of their Democratic colleagues were pretty angry about this. There are a couple of different things going on here. First, the 8 Democrats who crossed over and decided to vote for this were either very moderate or are retiring, right? Mm. And so they're not facing another re-election, or they're not facing re-election until 2028 or 2030. And what I think is going on here in part, and they don't always say this part out loud, is that a lot of Democrats wanted to end the shutdown, but these 8 were the ones who could afford to take this political hit. And so a lot of the other Democrats who are up for re-election or who are more vulnerable in their states can go to the voters and say, hey, I didn't vote for this. I'm in line with Democratic priorities. I'm supporting healthcare and things like that. And so there's some political machinations going on there.
So this does then, doesn't it sound like a win for the Republicans, for Donald Trump? I mean, you know, they sort of, these 8 Democrats passed this victory to him on a platter, right? This shutdown was hurting the president. So logic would say, don't fold.
I think that is one way of looking at it. And I think 2 things can be true at the same time. Mm. That prolonging this would have increased the hurt on Donald Trump and Republicans, but it also would have increased a lot of the hurt that we've been talking about on regular Americans and federal workers. You know, if I'm making the Democrats' argument who crossed over and voted for this, they would say, look, the Republicans in Congress still have to record an up or down vote on these healthcare subsidies, which we know are very popular. And so if Republicans and Donald Trump have to go on record against these subsidies and have a recorded vote against this, I do think Democrats are seeing that as a bit of a political win than to take into next year's elections and say, look, we voted to reopen the government. We voted in favor of these subsidies, and Republicans didn't want to do those, and now they have to run for re-election. So I think these Democrats, if they're making their best argument, they're saying, maybe we lost the battle, but we might win the war in the long run.
All right. Well, Charles, as we said, this was a really lengthy shutdown, the longest in history so far. The Democrats, they're trying to get a better health deal for Americans. So was anything actually achieved in these 40 or so days?
I'm not sure that much of policy substance was achieved. You know, there were a few items here and there, funding that were included in this final deal, some extra funding for SNAP benefits, some guarantees that these furloughed workers would be paid. The question is sort of how they handle the fight over subsidies and all the other legislative fights that are bound to show up over the next 6 months, including, by the way, another budget deadline in January,
yes,
because this deal only gets us to January.
Oh,
so, you know, I may be back on to talk about the next shutdown in January.
Yeah, I was going to say, dare I ask, what comes next? Obviously, this still needs passing and approval and
yes,
all sorts of things. But yeah, come January, what, another shutdown, another 40 days or more?
The number of things that could happen between now and then are innumerable, right? We've seen just over the past few months enormous changes wrought by this administration, but the political dynamics aren't likely to change, you know, unless something really monumental happens and Donald Trump becomes very popular. because he's not popular right now. His approval rating is hovering around 40%, the lowest of his presidency so far. And so Democrats may decide down the road, you know what, we're not going to fund your government anymore.
Dr. Charles Hunt is an associate professor of political science at the Boise State University. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Jessica Wukyanov. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.